Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT. Marcus, what's going on? Are you on holiday? No, you started back.
No, we're teaching this week.
Yeah. It's orientation though, right?
It's full-on teaching.
Oh, okay.
We get into it. We work hard at AUT.
That holidays went very, very fast. Okay, how fast is the universe expanding?
Well, that's a good question. We don't know. Well, we have an idea. actually, we have two ideas. It's been known since the 1920s. Edwin Hubble, aka the Hubble Telescope, figured out that the galaxies that he was looking at in the sky were moving away from us. Okay, so they're going faster, and the further away they were, the faster they were moving away from us.
Yeah.
So the universe. So he thought, okay, well, the universe is expanding, and he figured out that there was a roughly constant ratio between the speed that they were moving away from us and the distance that they were away. So the further away, the faster they were moving away. Yeah. And he came up with this constant to model this to show this relationship, which was imaginatively called the Hubble constant. Okay. And.
Okay.
And this was found to be have a value of 500 in whatever units, appropriate units. And then over the decades since then, astronomers have made more detailed measurements and tried to sort of really narrow down on whatever this constant is. They used the Hubble telescope, fittingly, I guess, they used the Hubble telescope to make lots of measurements, and they narrowed this down to a value of about 72, I think. With about a 10% error margin, 10% uncertainty. And then later measurements rounded it to 74 with just like a 2% uncertainty. So they're really honing in on this, whatever this value of this constant is. And then, so these measurements were all done by looking at the brightness of stars. So the further a star is away from us, the dimmer it is.
Yeah.
Because light spreads out in all directions, and the further you are away from it, you're going to see less light. And they came up with these standard candles, they're called, so a specific type of star, which is always the same brightness. So just by measuring its perceived brightness, you can figure out how far away.
Wow.
Okay. And so they got these values with increasing accuracy, or precision, I should say. And then along came these measurements of... what's called the cosmic microwave background. Basically, it's the afterglow from the Big Bang. And it's very, very cold, but there is still this sort of universe pervasive afterglow from the Big Bang.
Wow.
And they can use these measurements of that to come up with the value for the Hubble constant, and they got a different value. They got a value of about 67. Okay, and it sounds pretty close, 67, 74, that sounds pretty close, but... they're statistically significantly different. Yeah. So there's two camps. There's two possible values, and scientists don't really understand. Either there's something wrong with the measurement, or there's something wrong with the theory.
Okay.
Yeah. Just recently at the University of Chicago, they figured out a different way, a third way, I guess, of measuring the Hubble constant. And what they've done is they've used a different type of standard candle sort of star. So they've used basically stars called...
More recent one.
More reliable? Well, maybe. That's the difficulty. So they're measuring stars called red giants, and they're potentially more reliable because they don't get obscured by dust as much for various reasons. Anyway, they've done this, and they found a value of 70. So basically, all they've done is split the difference.
Oh no!
All right, which is sort
of
annoying.
Now we have three options.
So now we've got three options, right? And again, scientists really don't understand which one is correct. You know, why is this important? Because we really want to try and understand what is the fate of the universe. Was it going to expand, contract, all those sort of things?
Are we going to be able to figure that out, though?
Well, this is part of the way to it.
Once we figure it out, are we going to figure out what that means? Because we won't necessarily know what that means.
It's implied. So you may have heard of these sort of mysterious things called dark matter and dark energy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dark matter tends to pull things towards itself.
Yeah.
It's gravity. And dark energy tends to push things apart. So dark energy tends to increase the expansion of the universe, and dark matter tends to try and slow it down. And the balance between the two, you know, is significant. You know, how much dark matter and dark energy is there around?
A lot of both.
And yes, and they both affect this thing called the Hubble constant.
So, I mean, that's going to muck with your experiment regardless, right? At any given time.
Yeah, but these things change over a very, very long time period. Yeah. So we should be, if the theory is correct, right. Every measurement, independent measurement of the Hubble constant should give you the same values. See. It doesn't. So
Hubble was wrong, or?
Well, no, Hubble was right.
Hubble is a constant.
Hubble became a constant, yeah. So, no, he was right. The universe is expanding. It's just exactly how quickly it's expanding has big implications for dark energy, dark matter, and the fate of the universe.
And how long we're going to be around for.
Yes. Well, quite a while.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, the stars, eventually we just won't see them.
They'll be too far away.
Yeah.
I think that'll be...
There'll be nothing.
I think we'll be long gone
okay.
at that point.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, human legs and squid eyes.
Yeah.
I found this,
thought it was quite interesting. So people often... and there's sort of a link here, it's maybe slightly controversial, but people often reference the eye, the human eye, as a complex,
organ,
I guess.
Body part,
That couldn't have evolved naturally. Okay, it must have been sort of created by a creator.
Why?
And in fact, you know, it's been shown that this can be all this naturally. The eye could have evolved over time, over billions of years or whatever. But if you look at squids have these big eyes. And if you look closely at a squid, it looks very much like a human eye.
What?
But
I've
it
never
evolved.
Thought that.
So, well, you clearly haven't met many squids.
Okay, it's evolved.
But it's evolved. So squids and humans are on very, very distant, very, very distantly related.
Yeah.
You know, and so squid eyes evolved very differently to human eyes, but they still look quite similar.
Wow.
Yeah. And so. Both have very sophisticated eyes. They rely on lenses to focus the light, and we have good vision. Squids have excellent vision. But this independent evolution of such a complex sort of system has been puzzling. And people have been trying to search about how it came about. And so it turns out that biologists have discovered a gene that the gene that guides the initial formation of legs in us and other vertebrates also guide the formation of squids' lenses.
Okay, okay, so there's a relationship between our eyes and our legs?
No, between squids' eyes and our legs.
And our legs?
Yes, so the same gene that helps the formation of our legs...
What?
...is implicated in the formation of squids' eyes.
I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
How? Weird.
Well, it's an example of how nature, this is one of many examples, I think, of how nature recruits genes for one purpose to do another purpose in the body.
Far out.
So genes have multiple roles.
Yes, yeah, okay, that roles. I understand.
Right, so so the squid's lens forms as this membrane that juts out, and the specialized eye cells overlap it and form a sort of a tight ball. And it's similar to our lenses. Our lenses are actually degraded cells that are packed with this sort of clear protein. And to learn how the squid's lens is formed, the researchers tracked where, when, and which genes turned on and off as the embryos of a particular type of squid developed.
Wow.
Yeah. And the gene network for sprouting limbs got to work when the eye was developing.
Whoa.
Yeah. And when they added a chemical that inhibited that gene, then the lenses failed to form. So they showed it was this particular gene. And this is the same gene that's involved in our limbs growing.
Okay, you said that we have good eyesight and squid have excellent eyesight?
We both have.
Relatively the same? Or
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. I'm wondering whether it's like if we kick something to do with our leg genes, and then we can make our eyes better. Is that, or I'm just going off in a totally terrible tangent. All right. I've just Googled squid eyes on, and it's very...
Are you looking at squid
They're
eyes?
They're all looking at me, really. But they do somewhat look like ours, which I've never, considered.
But they're quite big, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, much bigger than ours. Okay, the first moon landing, which is, we've got an anniversary, right, this week?
So, yes, on Saturday, the 20th, is 50 years since, well, I guess it'll be more like our Sunday, but 50 years since Apollo 11 landed on the moon. And so everyone should celebrate in some way or commiserate that we haven't been back since, well, since Apollo, 15? So I wanted to sort of highlight some facts that people may not know about the Apollo 11 landing or mission. So just four facts. So first of all, and people may know this, the Saturn V rockets that were used for the Apollo 11 mission is still the largest and most powerful rocket ever built. So 50 years later, we haven't built a rocket bigger than that. Yeah. So
we've built the same, though. We've managed to do it again, or...?
Well, there was, it went from Apollo 11 to Apollo 17, I think, 17. And so they all use Saturn V rockets. But since then, we haven't used a rocket as big as that.
Wow.
Yeah. I think NASA is in the process of building a rocket that's bigger than that.
Hoping to achieve what with it?
Moon and Mars.
Okay.
Yeah, ultimately.
All right.
But yeah, Saturn V is still the biggest. And 50 years later...
Yeah. And especially in the time that our technology has advanced the most quickly, right?
Like exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
And so the rocket was big. I mean, I've got lots of statistics here, but it's enough to lift 130 tons into orbit. So that's the same as four double-decker buses into space.
What?
Yeah. That's a lot of stuff.
Yep. Okay. All right.
Number two, Apollo's crew compartment was about the same size as a large car. That was it.
Would they sleep there or would they hang out there?
That was their entire living space.
A small car?
Yes. A large car.
Sorry, large car. So like a van?
I don't know. I don't think that big. So the three of them spent eight days, traveled about 500,000 miles to the moon and back, and roughly the size of a large car. All right? So the astronauts were strapped into these sort of bench-like couches during the launch and landing. And in the command module, which measured 3.9 meters at its widest point, I guess, front to back.
Wow.
Yeah.
8 days.
So if you're claustrophobic, that wasn't a good place.
Well, I guess you're not. You don't pass the test if you're claustrophobic, right? All right, number three.
African-American women skilled in maths helped work out the route to the moon. So if any of you have seen...
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures, right. Yeah. So NASA actually employed a large number of mathematicians, many of them female, most of them female, I think, as human computers. So big, large-scale computing hadn't been developed.
Right, and they had to figure out all of the
And they had
math.
To figure out all the trajectories and all the math to get them there. And so many of these women were African-American women, and this is in the time still of segregation in the States. And they were processing data and performing all these calculations that really were critical to the success of the program. So one in particular, Katherine Johnson, who is in the film, who's represented in the film, became known for her work calculating trajectories for the first Americans in space, Alan Shepard and John Glenn, and later for the lunar module. And she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2015 by Barack Obama.
So not until much later were they recognized for this.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, number four.
And the last one, and this surprised me. So no one knows where the Apollo 11 module is.
Ah, why?
It's gone. No one knows where it is. So
this is, you mean when they came back?
This is the thing that landed on the moon. No, the thing that landed on the moon.
Ah.
Yeah, no one knows where it is. Okay, because the thing that landed on the moon brought the astronauts back to the to the orbiter that was going around the moon,
right? Yeah?
And then and then it was jettisoned before they came back to Earth, but it didn't need it anymore. So they jettisoned
so
it was, off into space.
So it was connected to them.
So it brought them back up to the orbiter that was going around the moon. Yeah.
So they littered in space.
And then they littered in space. Yeah.
Rude.
But they don't. So there were, of all the Apollo missions, for two of them, they don't know where the lander is.
I guess it would just float away, right? Or disappear.
Right. Well, some of them crash landed on the moon. So some of them actually fell back down onto the moon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Littered on the moon.
Some burned up in the littered on the moon. That's right. Some of them burned up in the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
So they got captured by Earth gravity, and one in particular went into orbit around the sun.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's still now floating
still
around in space.
Still floating around the
sun.
Yeah,
all by itself.
Oh.
And that's Apollo 10's lunar module, which went to the moon but didn't land, was jettisoned into space and went into orbit around the sun. And they recently, astronomers said they were about 98% sure they'd located it. So just tiny
still
little...
Still going. Just going.
They located the drifting capsule that they named Snoopy. 50 years after its last sighting.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But the Apollo 11 lander, they don't know where it went.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, maybe I suppose that adds to the conspiracies around people not landing at all.
Yeah, conveniently they don't have it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Marcus. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you then.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Cheer up your...